Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR. Jeff Dedarian, News 8 in studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. AJ, Jeff had a lot of questions about you during the break. I said, ask him on the air.
Yeah. Hey, okay. AJ, how's it going?
It's good. Everything's good.
So how are you feeling? I know that you have to kind of stay away from people. I was talking to Chaz during the song there about how things are going. I know you have to kind of limit your contact, and a lot of people have been asking about your people at the station.
At the box. It was at the box.
Nice. Yeah.
People
Thank you so much.
So I figured, ask him on the air?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I mean, all my numbers are where they're supposed to be. In some cases, I'm actually ahead of schedule. The main thing is I have to reach a certain level in my ability to fight infections, like in case someone's sick. So when those numbers get to where they're supposed to be, then they open the door and I'm out.
Hmm. And then you're going to find that number out on the 4th?
Yeah, the 4th. Yeah,
people asking
fourth,
about so. The toy drive. I'm like, you know, that might be a little bit much to have hundreds of people coming up. And
We'll see what happens. I mean, my fingers are crossed. I want to go. Yeah. I really want to go.
Yeah.
But see what happens. So fingers are crossed. So but cross you your fingers
about,
for me.
You think about where we were last year at the toy drive. People were coming up to me saying, what's up with AJ? He looks very ill. And
you know
look great
up is,
now. You sound, you've gone through everything. Go ahead.
I see the pictures of me because it comes up in my Facebook memories. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. You know, when you see yourself every day, you have no idea how you look.
Right.
And this explains all those shocked looks I was getting. I'm like, my fly open? What's going on over here?
Jeff, he was on this diet, and, you know, I saw what he was eating. He was eating he wanted to, and then he was, like, fasting, and he was losing all this weight. And I'm asking him, I'm like, what is this diet? Because I want to lose this weight.
Right.
Like, he timed it out. It couldn't have been worse because we thought he was just losing weight from the diet.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea.
I mean, I've
a book.
I've seen some of the pictures. You know, take some of your cars out for a ride, and you look great, and I know it's been really hard, and I'm just, you know, I'm sending prayers and good thoughts to you, and you're a real fighter.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
I ran into Mike, a tribe member at Lowe's, yesterday, and he said he ran into you at Smilo, and I said, what were you doing there? He's like, hey, I got the same thing AJ does, and fighting a good fight. I'm like, you look great. He's like, I'm winning. This is not going to be a thing. And I said, that's exactly how AJ feels.
Exactly. We're kicking its ass and screw you.
Yeah. Kicking its ass and screw you.
Yep.
Jeff Dedarian, News 8 in studio. You're launching a true crime podcast.
That's correct. I have launched it. I did the first episode. It's called True Crime Investigations, Trail of Evidence. And basically,
this will be specifically Connecticut.
It'll branch out beyond Connecticut, but in the beginning, the first episode was with the Connecticut cannibal, and I know that you folks...
The Bridgeport guy,
and I know you had the sister-in-law.
But he's
Ruth
out, like, free now.
He's out free and supposed to do 60 years in a state psychiatric hospital.
Unbelievable.
Ended up doing 10, so that's the first episode that I launched, and
Are you judgmental, or were you just fact-based? Like, do you give your take on it, or are you basically running through a story like it's a news story?
I mean, it definitely leans toward running through, you know, a news story. I think that...
Then you need people like us on it.
Exactly. So, I mean...
You need some spice.
Yeah, I have an attorney that's on, Ryan McGuigan, who's a former prosecutor who does a lot of stuff with us at News 8.
Good.
And he takes us through, like, how is this even possible?
Yeah, right. you need someone who's has a... Your facts, and then they're the take on it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's another platform, and, you know, it's a way to do extended stuff on my work. And
so give us 30 seconds on this guy in case someone's listening and they don't know what happened.
So Tyree Smith was a guy from Bridgeport. He, invited someone in and basically, you know, brought him up to his apartment. It was a cold December night, and the guy's name was Angel. And he literally, I know it's morning time, but he ate portions of his brain and eyeball. First killed him with a hatchet.
Which guy did the guy who...
Tyree Smith is the cannibal.
He's the cannibal. He invited the guy up.
He invited the guy, Angel.
He's like,
in.
You look cold. Come in.
Come in. Yeah. It was kind of like befriending him, and the guy, Angel...
Tricked him.
Like,
I'm a nice
guy. Very good word.
Then all of a sudden,
100%.
Not.
And then, supposedly, according to investigators, hearing voices and killed him with a hatchet, then took portions of his brain and his eyeball out, ate them, went to a cemetery, drank sake, and had the portions of the body parts, then fled, went to Florida, according to the sister-in-law, stopped at a restaurant, ordered a rare steak, and just, you know, everything that you could not imagine.
Yeah, it seems like 10 years is enough, right? Yeah, so, we just put him back out with everybody.
So he, you know, was found not guilty by reason of insanity, which means you're, you know, you're an acquitted person. You don't face any criminal liability for that. So he went to the he went to Whiting, was supposed to be there for 60 years, got out in 10 years, conditional release, started kind of like John Hinckley, remember? Kind of like got to go out for a few hours, then he got to stay one night, then et cetera. And then they all determined that the state psychiatric review board that he was fine and that he was not a threat to anybody.
Yeah.
So a lot of people shake their head at this one. And so that's the one I decided to do first for the podcast.
And where is he now?
I think he's in Waterbury. They're very, very tight-lipped about where he is. I've tried to find him and try and interview him and kind of give him his side of the story.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're very, the state is, you know, very protective of him. Too protective, in my opinion, because, you know, people should kind of be able to know, especially the family, where is he? And so, but
right.
They're very.
The family should know that, no?
Correct. And they're very protective of information. They don't release it. They say it's for his safety.
It's gross. They're more for the criminals than they are for the people who are victims.
Sometimes that, it certainly seems that way, for sure.
No, I know you have to go down the middle because you're a reporter.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true. I'm sorry.
It's true, very
true. Talk to a victim and go and talk to 10 victims.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
I
talk to victims every day.
And, okay.
And some of
these. Do any of them say, oh, no, man, they're on my side?
Never.
Never.
Never, not
exactly
once.
Right.
Never, not once.
So Jeff Dedarian, News 8, is in studio, and he's launching a true crime podcast. And we thought, well, let's call in some Connecticut-based true crime stories that Jeff should cover. 203-882-9757. Jim on the road, what do you think?
Morning, guys.
Hey.
Morning.
I'm the retired DOC, Department of Corrections, and there when Fotis Doulos came in. And I can tell you that, honestly, he was one of the calmest guys I've ever met for everything that he was looking at. He sat in his cell. He was isolated. And he just read books, didn't say a word to anyone, sat there, calm, cool, and collective, extremely cold-blooded.
Kind of like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Very much so. Like, in the same type of corridor, single cell, just like, hello, how are you? And would read a book and had not a care in the world.
So would he...
Do you remember Fuzz?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
So would he talk to other inmates? Did they keep him out of general population? Was he in SAG? Like how did they treat him?
He was in SAG because of the high profile.
Yep.
I don't think he was talking to any inmates at all. He was kept to himself, extremely reserved. Again, like very cold blooded. Very no expressions, no reactions whatsoever. A very odd person to deal with.
I'm sure Norm Patters, his attorney at the time, told him, don't talk, don't get chatty with people.
Exactly.
But he did have this I'm smarter than everybody kind of vibe to him. And, you know, we all know he did it. We just don't know where she is.
Correct.
And that's the mystery that would be great to have solved.
Right.
But maybe that's the angle you take. Like, because they went through a lot of trouble going through that dump.
Yeah.
And they've looked at various places where they thought...
Right, the gun club. They went to the gun club. And they really think, you know...
That's the mystery.
There's talk that she's there, but they never found her there.
Right.
But that's kind of the last stop, they think.
It's weird that... Because Dr. Phil did this special early, and I told Norm, oh, man, your dude's going down. Like, Dr. Phil... This is way before, you know, and this is only what he had. He had all the footage of his car, that pickup truck going all the way up the highway.
Right.
And then at a car wash, you know, and then they showed him later, you know, dumping stuff off. I'm like, it's just the in-between stuff. I'm surprised they don't have that, or at least they never showed it to us, you know?
I think if they had it, they would have showed it.
Thank you, Jim.
My sense, just because of all the publicity, and they would have liked to have connected all the dots for some reason. I don't know why, because there's so many cameras everywhere now.
Right. How did they not get that part? Where is she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right?
Right.
Obviously. And, you know, Trakonis, she's, you know, fighting for a new trial. She's fighting to get out while she's waiting to hear about a new trial. So come January, you're going to, there'll be news on that.
She was very involved. You know, it's my take, but, you know, you don't, after all of this stuff with the ex-wife, you don't go driving with your boyfriend, dumping off stuff in plastic bags, saying, oh, this is, what are we doing?
Well, that would be my, I mean, if I ever, and I tried really hard, like a lot of other reporters did, but to try and talk with her. And that was, you know, I had some conversations with people who were connected to her case. And I said, look, that's going to be the first question for me, because that's like, that's Connecticut's version of OJ and the white Bronco. So she's in the truck. She's making all these stops. What's happening in the truck as you're sitting next to him?
What is he
telling
you?
What were those
you?
Conversations?
Yeah.
You know, did she know anything? How could she not?
The practice scripts.
Right.
For the lie, for the alibi.
Was he saying, and again, this is all conjecture here, but was he saying, look, if you say anything, then your daughter is at risk, your family's at risk. I know where your family is in Miami. I'm going to kill them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but these are all the questions that should be answered, and she's never spoken. She's never explained.
And then immediately after, you know, people are calling the house like, hey, have you seen mom? Hey, have you seen?
Yeah.
What was her reaction in those moments?
Right. Right. Yeah.
It wasn't like, hey, you know, it's weird. Your ex-wife's missing. And we went on that drive to Hartford dumping stuff off. You know, can
right.
you,
yeah.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So those are the big questions. And, you know, I don't know if she takes the stand in this, you know, and this other sort of, it's too complicated legally, but she's trying to get out something called a habeas, which gets her out while she's waiting to hear if she gets a new trial. But, you know, there would be a lot of questions that would have to come forward. And, you know, they're trying to humanize her, and you know, she's never talked. So I think if she's looking to, you know, change her fate, that's what I told the family, that you should consider her talking.
Yeah,
that's
what
a good way to get her on camera.
Well, I mean, you know, we can report, like I tell people all the time, we're doing the story. We've done the story. So we can either include you, and it will be better if we include you, Chaz. Mm. If you don't want to talk, that's fine. But just understand, I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
So stories are always better when the other side talks.
About, you know, here's the thing. We've seen enough of people talking to the media, and then like the Karen Reed.
Correct.
Bad move for her.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she ultimately got off, but that was not a good move for her.
Was not.
And
it
that's
was
what
not.
An attorney said. They,
yeah.
You know, clients aren't. Fotis Doulis probably would have, because. And he did, didn't he? Didn't he talk to NBC or something? He did an interview.
He did sit down with NBC, I think.
Yeah.
And there was a time he was like jogging and like talking to people.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He thought he could outsmart everybody. Jeff Dedarian, News 8's on the show, and he's doing a true crime podcast, and we're talking about cases in Connecticut that he should talk about. Nurse Diane.
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning. Thanks for being a nurse.
Yes.
Thank you for acknowledging that. I was interested in the case from the 70s in Monroe, Connecticut. Renee Freer, an 8-year-old girl who was found bludgeoned to death in the woods behind her house. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am. Hey there, good morning, and thank you for being a nurse as well. I just talked, oddly that you, Todd, that you called in, but I just talked to the family yesterday.
Wow.
And we're just plotting out how we're going to do it, what we're going to include. They're now trying to get something passed called Renee's Law, which would be legislation, which they don't know if they're going to get it going in February.
What would the legislation be?
You know, I've got to get, I'm not sure what it would do, but I think it's centered around victims advocate work and just kind of, you know, making sure that how different crimes get investigated. But I think for me, the case, that the part that makes it intriguing is that it's almost 50 years ago now. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's still.
Was there a list of suspects for that one?
Well, it's interesting because I actually have a suspect and they can't do anything about it. I guess they had an arrest warrant or something. And it got shot down because of the statute of limitations, because he was 13 at the time.
Right.
So they know who it is, and they can't say. And I guess a lot of people from the neighborhood who were there at the time kind of have their own thing.
And they all think the same thing?
Yeah.
And that person still lives in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Right, and that's why statute of limitations is very, you know, you see it with the Epstein stuff. You see it with a lot of things, and it's just very controversial, obviously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it sounds like Jeff's going to be covering that case. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in with that.
Phil and I were just talking off the air. We're asking you to call in with Connecticut true crime stories that Jeff Dedarian News 8 could do on his podcast. There was some story in Madison, and we have some pieces of it, but we need your help to fill them in.
I think you had watched a documentary. I remember it a couple of years back. It was in Madison, and what I remember is that the mom had died, and there was some mystery around the death, and the son wanted to solve the crime. And as he's going through the evidence, he keeps coming back to, oh, man, it's my dad. And I believe the crime is still unsolved.
All of that sounds familiar, and I just can't. I'm right there. I'm like, yeah, this sounds familiar. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Let's go to Brenna in Glastonbury. Hey, Brenna.
Hello.
Hello.
So, this one's from the early 90s, Karen Apero. She was in high school and was being raised by a single mom who was a piece of work. And she basically manipulated her boyfriend into murdering her mother. And his friends helped cover it up. He went to jail. He's out now, but she got off scot-free. So I'm always surprised that one doesn't get more coverage.
So how do we know she was involved?
There's evidence. There's actually a show on Oxygen about it, and there's a book about it. But the mother really was a piece of work. Like, she told Karen that her father was the Archbishop of Hartford, and he wasn't. So she definitely did it, but she just had really good lawyers, so she got off scot-free. She lives, I think, in Missouri somewhere now. But, yeah, he went to prison, and he's out now.
Okay, so
he did the time.
So he got convicted of the murder, but you're saying this other person had a role in it. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. She wanted her mother out of the picture because her mother was very controlling and manipulative, and she got her boyfriend to do it.
Mm. All right, I'll look into it.
There's a bunch more, though. You should also look at the Marianne Measles case in, I think it was New Fairfield, New Milford. That one's really sad. She was 13, and she was murdered by a bunch of people. Peter Riley from the early 70s out in Falls Village. He was a teenager, also accused of murdering his mother. They were awful to him. Michael Ross, the serial killer from Connecticut.
Brenna, you seem to know a lot about crimes in Connecticut.
I'm a little bit of a junkie.
Right, do you?
The one in Madison, his first name is Madison, but I can't remember the last name, but you're right. And they also thought that the mom was involved in, like, a pyramid scheme with other moms to make money.
That's right.
The gifting table? That's it.
Yes.
So anyway, there you go. Thank you for taking my call. I look very much forward to listening to your podcast. As you can tell, huge fan of true crime. Thank you.
We might have to have you come on as a producer or something. I don't know.
That's right.
Consultant.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Maybe. All right. Well, thanks. Yeah.
Have a good day.
You too, Brenna.
You too. Wow.
Wow. She's like rattling them off.
She knows them all.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah.
When I mentioned you know a lot about crime, she hurried herself off the phone.
Right.
It's like, okay, got to go.
Right. Bye-bye.
Just kidding, Brenna. Thank you for the call. Sean in Naugatuck.
Hey.
Hey.
The lady before me just took mine. I was going to talk about the Marianne Measles case, but she already took it.
All right, but were you going to do it on the mouthpiece of the phone, or were you going to do it a mile away?
I want to hear you.
Sean? I'm going to talk about the Marianne Measles case.
Okay.
The lady before me already took it.
Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Sean.
Yep. And AJ, hope you feel better.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Kind words. All right. This one, I was going to mention this one. Chris in Meriden has it. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, Chad?
Hey.
Yeah, the Billy Smolinski case in Waterbury there.
They never figured it out.
Yep. Yeah, that's another one too. I talked to the
They never found him.
No.
They kind of, you know, like some kind of politician and everything else was all mixed in, and brothers and drugs and everything else, you know.
Yeah, I just talked to the mom on that one last week, and I am going to do that one. It's just the mom and the dad. They live in Florida now, Juniper, I think, Jupiter rather, and we got to just coordinate when they're back here in Connecticut. So I am going to do
what
the Billy Simmons
with that
new one.
It was a bad breakup, right? Is that what we think?
It was, and then you know, it just
a girlfriend, a bus driver.
I don't know if she was a.
I can't remember.
He just disappeared. It was mysterious.
Yeah, it's a truck driver, like
his pickup truck was there.
Dude,
right.
The dog.
Right, the dog. Like, he would have never left. The things he left behind, he would have never left behind. He just disappeared.
Right, and there was some speculation about the girlfriend, and they were...
The woman never leaves the dog, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's on my list for sure. So I just got to coordinate it with a mom, and she's such a sweet lady, and they're older now, and it's just, you know...
It's tough.
It's so horrible.
All right, Chris. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Chris.
That's a very tough case. It's tough for the parents.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
They're not knowing what happened. I know they did some excavating in Shelton once at a construction site a house where they thought that was under construction around that time. They thought he might be in there. Ashley in Southbury.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hello.
I'm calling because I was Marianne Measles' best friend.
Oh.
I was in her friend group, so I just figured I would call because I heard her name mentioned, so...
Can you tell us what you remember about her, and for people that don't know, what happened?
Yeah, of course. So I was 12 years old when this happened. It was in 1997. Marianne was just like an all-American girl. She was a very happy, friendly, just like a social butterfly. And she got in with a group of people that were older than her and started dating seeing... is how she described it to me, someone named Keith Foster. And sorry, just like I get a little emotional about this. And when she started seeing him, she started changing. That group of friends that he was with isolated her from us, and she totally changed her personality, changed her character, changed. She was doing things that like older girls would do. They are taking her out and doing terrible things to her. I'm not really sure what I could say on the radio because this is a pretty heinous crime, and heinous things were done to her before this. And then ultimately, the group of eight of them, the girlfriends were jealous because they had girlfriends, and they saw Marianne as someone who was sleeping with their boyfriends instead of... I don't know what I can say on the radio. I'm sorry. Instead of like pressuring her basically at the age of 13 to do these things with her. So they planned to murder her, and they got together and they kidnapped her from Big Y parking lot in New Milford and drove her to River Road, where the eight of them basically beat her for hours. And they drowned her in the river. And then after we didn't find her body for a year, they found her body in Lake Willanoa. It was 8 months. In July of 1998, they found her body in Lake Willanoa.
Do you remember the last time you spoke to her and what you said to her?
The most significant thing I remember is lunch on Friday. So she was writing a statement about statutory rape against Keith and AJ. So... she was going to go to the police department. Her mom was going to pick her up from school early that day. And I remember her talking to myself and our other best friend, Donna. And she said that she was really nervous because she was going to write this statement and she didn't know what was going to happen to her. And she went and wrote the statement and she couldn't finish it. It was too emotional for her. So the detectives decided just to wrap it up for the day, and they would... finished writing the statement on Monday. Monday never came. She was murdered before she could finish her statement.
Well, I'm sorry to hear all that. That's
horrible.
Who
was convicted?
There's eight.
They were all convicted?
Yes. One of them is actually out. Maggie Bennett is out. Keith Foster and AJ are doing the most amount of time. I think Keith has 110 years. There's Rung, Raj Cox. There is also June Bates, Dorothy Hollis. They were all in this group, and they all planned it. It was premeditated, so.
Man, that's a tough one.
Yeah, sounds like this is one that I should look into.
And yeah, would you be willing to talk to Jeff on his podcast about this?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I always speak to her family first because I'm very close to her family, so out of respect to them, I just would speak to them first. I'm sure they would be okay with it. We also did a documentary. Recently, we did an episode on A Killer Among Friends on the ID channel. It's called She's No Runaway, and it kind of is all of us just giving a small clip of the story. It's a 45-minute piece, but it could, I mean, this could be, this could go on for like 10 episodes. There's so much to the story.
Wow. Well, you tell it really well, and you honor your friend by telling it, and it keeps her alive.
Maybe we could, if it's all right, if we could get your number offline.
I think Phil has it.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Phil will get it to you if that's okay. Ashley, thanks for calling and appreciate it. And tough story. Very sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ash.
Thank you.
Jeff Dedarian, News 8. Yeah, it sounds like a compelling podcast, an important podcast. There's a lot of podcasts out there that are just a waste of time. This is important because these are important stories. These were human beings, and they're no longer with us, and the story should be told.
Yeah, and there's all, listen, people calling in with all of these, you know, incredible details from decades and decades ago. These things just stick with you, these stories, and this is, that was her best friend, and they knew each other since they were 12, and, you know, it just, you know, in the news cycle, right? We do these stories on TV, and it's just the nature of it, and it kind of goes away. And but
you could do 4 minutes on Alyssa Taglia's baby, but 2.5 minutes on an important story. Just saying, not that the baby's not important. Jeff's looking at me like, thanks a lot, pal. Thanks. Now, my
AJ, AJ, how about that forecast?
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.